is Mark Strassman, reporter with Unwired LA. We're about to talk to Morley Winograd, who is the chair of the mayor's broadband executive panel. Welcome to Unwired LA.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Well, why don't we talk about where the initiative for this initiative came from? What do you know about that?
The initiative sprung from a conversation that the mayor has been having with his staff for some time, that the staff finally decided they ought to act upon, which was the desire to see how to take advantage of wireless technologies, in the mayor's mind, Wi-Fi in particular, from an economic development perspective in the city. And I was asked what I thought about the idea, and I told them that as executive director of one of LA's telecom resources, the Center for Telecom Management at USC's Marshall School of Business, I'd be happy to recruit some experts in the field and see if we couldn't put together a good advisory panel to frame a plan as opposed to leap into something.
Okay, that sounds good. What past lives have you led, or mentioned only a few of them, that qualified you to be the point man on this?
Well, as I said, I have that current position where I run the Center for Telecom Management. I spent 18 years with AT&T. In between that job and this job, I also spent almost 4 years as a senior policy advisor to Vice President Ford.
I'm sorry, it dropped out. A senior advisor to whom?
Senior policy advisor to Vice President Gore, the father of the Internet.
Yeah, the father of the Internet, exactly. Tell us a little bit about the what's happened so far with the broadband executive panel. Have you had any meetings? What how organized are you right now?
The panel met for the first time on the 15th of November. We had a discussion, a presentation by the mayor's deputy on his vision, a discussion by the staff of the city in terms of current hotspot deployment and current activity in the city, and then the panel had a chance to discuss at some length the critical issues they thought we ought to address. We settled on a scope, which is to explore the world of untethered broadband and where it might be over the next 5 years, so that we didn't wed ourselves to a particular technology. We have to deliver a report to the mayor in April of 2005. That report will lay out our vision, some of the values that we think will be important in achieving the vision, such as, although we didn't agree upon them, the issues of universality and equity and so forth. And then we got into a conversation about some of the things we need to understand and describe as part of justifying whatever suggested strategies we put in the report. And those things include, beyond just the context of where we are now, they include the technology trends that we see likely to occur over that time span, the kind of customer outcomes the technologies might provide, opportunities to create, some of the practices in government that could be improved or are other people are doing to take advantage of the technology, and then a general word called business models, which really means, you know, is it going to be free? Is it going to be tiered? Is it going to be free to some and not to others? That sort of thing.
Okay, now I've already interviewed three members of the panel, and this is a pretty high-powered group. You want to say anything about either any of them individually or all of them individually, or just in general what the people are bringing to this panel?
Well, somebody accused me of putting together a panel of my friends, but
right.
It's people I've known who've been active in this conversation, extraordinarily knowledgeable and insightful people. We have representatives from some of the cable and carriers that the mayor asked to join so they would feel they had a place at the discussion table. We have some of the city departments that are most affected, not just the IT department, but community redevelopment and the Department of Water and Power. But we also have people like Todd Richmond, who runs the Annenberg Center for Communications and Digital Media, rather, at the USC that explores these worlds from a society perspective. We have the guy who installed a complex wireless system in a small city environment, the campus, from USC. We have somebody who didn't come to the first panel meeting who's very knowledgeable on this issue, who's done investments in IT, and we had another venture capitalist there who did participate, who's active in this world. And we had the experts from UCLA who are very much involved in the engineering and technology aspects of it.
So this is really an all-star team on the business part, the technical part, the social part, the political part. If this group can't do it, nobody can, it seems to me.
I think the interesting part about the panel will be seeing if all these experts can come to any kind of consensus.
Right.
It's one thing to have, you know, a perspective and an idea, and it's another to meld that into a vision that works for the whole city. We'll have some help from the public. We're going to, we want to actively use Utopia and its web discussions.
We'll have to call it Utopia. Got to get our branding right. Utopia, right.
Sorry, Utopia.
Right, Utopia Media.
We want people to contribute to you, knowing we'll be reading every one of those contributions.
Right.
We're going to use the neighborhood councils and public hearings and other internet devices as well, methodologies rather, to try and encourage as much public input. But you are absolutely right. We do start with a terrific base of knowledge and expertise.
Okay, why don't you talk a little bit, let's say everything works out. What do you see as the best case scenario promise of an unwired LA? What's it going to be able to, what will individuals, companies, organizations, and communities be able to do with a universal, ubiquitous, wireless LA that makes that available everywhere, all the time, every place, and either for free or they have to pay for it?
Well, obviously the key issue there is we want it to be speed as well as ubiquitous.
Right.
The world really changes when you have broadband speeds and wireless, because it's always on and it's always with you.
Right.
And we think that can be used to, first of all, simply improve the operations and efficiencies of city government, either saving money in terms of taxes and thereby encouraging economic development from a lower tax cost structure, or if the city should decide redeploying that to other things,
right,
that are pressing needs in the city. But once you get beyond the city operations, for the residents, it is an opportunity to live in a place where you can truly connect to your fellow community members. And you can describe that community no longer by where you live and the people you are able to come in contact with physically, but anybody who shares a common interest and a perspective that you enjoy sharing. All of those virtual communities can be created and nurtured and developed online when the issue of connecting to them is no longer a major financial consideration nor a physical impossibility.
It really delivers on what the promise of the Internet has always been.
Well, you know, the promise of the Internet keeps getting renewed, but
right.
You're absolutely right.
And
the reason that the Internet took off,
right,
is because the killer app email allowed people to communicate and create content,
right,
that they wanted to share with other people they knew and not have it broadcast at them, but have it created from the bottoms up. And
right.
This would allow us to do that not just with email text, but with video, with pictures, with anything that the human spirit can create
and
be shared.
Right. And in fact, I think it was Bob Metcalf, the inventor of Ethernet, who said that the power of a network is varies as the square of the number of people connected to it.
The value grows exponentially.
Right, and I've added the corollary of multiplied by the bandwidth.
And I think that's important.
Okay.
Certainly, bandwidth makes a big difference.
Now, I know you haven't decided about this, and you haven't even really framed the issue completely. But just to say a little bit about the competing ideas of for pay or for free, and how that's going to figure in your deliberations.
Well, there's the first philosophical question, I guess, which is broadband the next utility, and therefore ought to be provided by the city,
right,
like water or electricity?
Right.
Now, keep in mind, the city does not give away that for free either.
Right.
But there's a philosophical question of whether that's an appropriate activity for a government, given the rate of technological change and the nature of an infinite resource outside of the spectrum side. Is that something that the city should even be in the business of providing?
Right.
But even if you get past that and say, well, no, maybe the city shouldn't provide it, and that's certainly not something the panel's decided, there remains the question, well, what role does the government have in providing that opportunity to gain access to such services to its citizens?
Right.
And as we heard in the panel discussion, there are some markets that the economics would not suggest would be immediately served. The city might create either incentives or deliver themselves services to those later developing or underserved markets. It might stay away from all the markets and opportunities that the private sector feels are economically justified because they're in there, or it might decide that they're in there but in a way that it doesn't address the values the city has, either in terms of equity or accessibility. And so it might say, as it does with cable, well, you can provide the service, but here are the rules you have to follow. Now, I don't want to suggest that the panel is going to, has either come close to settling those issues, because we haven't,
right,
or is going to come down one way or the other. But those are some of the things that they'll tackle at the end as we get into business model questions.
Okay. Now, I've got a call in to the FCC to talk to one of their engineering people about what they call RF emission problems, threats, health threats. Could you say something in general about that? Because apparently this is one of the most, this is one of the stumbling blocks that may appear here, that that people are, either the fact that it can cause problems by saturating an area with this much radio frequency, or it won't, but people will be worried that it does, and that might present problems also. What's your preliminary view on that as an issue?
Yeah, I haven't seen any studies that suggest RF presence is a problem. There have been studies that suggested that if you hold it close to your heart or your brain, particularly in the electrical generation side of it, it's a difficulty, but it has to be a tremendous amount of use. I don't think the city's entrance into that world will be, you know, a determining health factor.
Right.
Because it's going to happen anyway, as people continue to want more and more of this kind of service.
Right.
And so I think the health problems will need to be addressed, but I would not, in the long run, I would not expect our panel to get there in the time we have.
Okay. You've had experience at the national political level. What about the Department of Homeland Security and the whole issue of Homeland Security as facilitated by broadband clouds throughout cities, both for, especially for first responders and other public
right.
service organizations?
Well, the public safety aspects of what broadband can do will definitely be something the panel considers when it looks at the city operations. In many ways, public safety applications can justify a deployment into areas that would not otherwise be justified,
right.
and provide the basis of an infrastructure that can then deliver other more discretionary services. But the needs of first responders will certainly be part of the things that the panel addresses.
Now, part of this, closely related to that, and something that keeps that appears more and more frequently, is the idea of video surveillance, which is made a lot easier this way because you can put cameras almost anywhere and you can connect them through the broadband network, and the issue arises, who's entitled to look at what, when, and how. Are you going to look at that also?
Maybe. In other words, the City of London, really under the impetus of their terrorist concerns back in the days of the Irish Wars,
right.
Deployed an extensive public video system. I think there's nowhere in London you can go without your picture being taken.
Right.
And they've used it successfully for now other types of crime control and crime prosecution.
Is it working? Is it effective?
It's working and it's effective, but it obviously falls within the culture of a country that doesn't have the kind of privacy regulations while also having stricter government secrecy laws than Americans are used to. So
right.
I think that issue will definitely be what I would call a tension point
right.
in the acceptance of this kind of technology.
Right.
And so we'll have to suggest, if we went as far as to suggest video surveillance, we'd obviously have to address that issue. But I don't think the panel is going to get into that level of detail. I think we'll sketch out in the application arena some things the city should consider in their potential, particularly the cost benefits, and then leave it to the city to work out those kinds of details and issues.
Okay, of course, this being Los Angeles / Hollywood, a countervailing force may be that everyone wants to be on TV, and this will give them a chance to do it.
Yes, well, we could have our own American Idol process.
That's right, millions of people, everyone in the city singing at once. And
well, there's also the possibility of everybody, you know, becoming their own movie producer and sharing their own created content.
Absolutely.
In South Korea with the highest level of wireless broadband penetration, people are now becoming their own television stations, producing
exactly.
content that they broadcast to their friends. So who knows?
Yeah, this is what William Irwin Thompson suggested in 1974 in a book called Passages About Earth, that each person would become an institution based on the ubiquity of more powerful technology.
And certainly this technology makes that future world more present.
Okay, now, just as I was getting revved up to start covering Unwired LA, SBC announced that it was going to spend $4 billion to put fiber optic cable around in its 13 states, including California and Los Angeles. Did you see any coincidence in the timing? When I talked to them, they said it was mainly because the federal government finally gave them some regulatory room to run in. But I'm wondering what you see as the relationship between increased fiber capacity, delivering, they're saying 20 to 25 megabits per second speeds to the home, in the context of the unwiring of L.A.
Well, first of all, I think their deployment schedules are certainly influenced by the regulatory decisions that have been reached recently, and also competitive moves. Verizon, for instance, has an extensive program in the East on this, and will obviously bring it to their service districts here in the West.
Right.
And SBC, to some degree, is responding to that. In terms of what fiber to the home will bring, that's a race between the wireline carriers, traditional carriers like SBC,
right,
and the cable companies. The cable companies have a head start because they have higher speed coax already wired to the house,
right,
with video possibilities. The fiber obviously would allow SBC, which I think today announced an agreement with Microsoft on some of the television programming.
I didn't see that yet.
Opportunities. I think they see this as a way of catching up, just as there was the initial race between cable modems and DSL modems,
right,
on providing regular broadband. All of that's wonderful. That demonstrates the kinds of things where the city doesn't need to be involved, and the marketplace will drive it. The question is, you know, fiber is not going to go to every home. It's economically infeasible.
Right.
Are there other technologies and other alternative choices that need to be made to assure all the citizens or residents of L.A. that they have an equal opportunity at this sort of thing?
Okay. The report's supposed to come out in April, right?
Yes.
And there's going to be an election here in March, right?
I believe is the primary in March?
I think the primary is in March, right.
Okay.
So is there any relationship, do you think? Is this going to become a political issue? Might it? Would that be a bad idea, a good idea? Is there
I hope it doesn't. I haven't heard it raised in the political debate, and I hadn't thought about April, where we'll either already know the answer or
right,
be in the middle of deciding the final answer. Well, so I don't know how that'll play out.
Are you satisfied with the level of interest from the political side on this? Do you think that a decision has been taken, that this is important enough to make sure we do it right, but make sure we do it pretty soon?
Well, doing it pretty soon in city government terms is somewhat dependent upon council politics,
right,
which are a little murky to me.
Right.
I know the council has expressed some interest in this issue, but whether they have enough of an interest to allocate significant budget resources in a time of constrained budgets remains to be seen.
Okay, well, let me ask two things.
I do think, though, thinking about the timing of the report, to your earlier question, April is the month in which the budget debate begins in earnest, so
right,
maybe that's the reason for this timing.
Two things, then, from what you just brought up. Are you going to be working to bring the council in on the takeoff so they'll be in on the landing on this?
I'm sure that when we go out and talk to the public, we'll include the councilmen and get their input, absolutely.
Okay, and then on the budget side, can you make a very rough estimate, or will it depend on the model that you decide on, and will that be an important consideration about how much it's going to cost and who's going to pay for it?
Let me say, any proposal that suggests it would raise revenue,
right,
will be eagerly received by the council and the mayor, because they need to find money to close a chronic budget deficit. A proposal that suggested the city, in the middle of all the other challenges it has, should go out and spend hundreds of millions of dollars to do this, well, I think it's just not realistic in the short run. So we'll be looking for something that either pays for itself or comes out on the positive side.
Okay, and given the technology, that's not an unreasonable goal, is it?
Oh, no. If we can't do that, we're not very good experts, I don't think.
Okay. Just as a kind of caution, is it possible that between what SBC is doing and Verizon and what the city may do with wireless, that we'll get more bandwidth than we need, and that we're close already to reaching a saturation point if everyone is sending constant video of themselves to everybody else? Is that going to be really necessary? Or?
Well, each individual will get to decide that for themselves, but
right,
so far there's nothing in the history of mankind that suggests there's too much bandwidth when it comes to allowing people to share their lives with others they care about.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Thanks for sharing this time with Unwired LA. You're on the freeway. You're on the freeway. That leads to this, I guess, final question.
Yes.
A lot of traffic congestion in Los Angeles. It's getting almost impossible to go anywhere at almost any time of the day.
So I noticed.
although that provided this opportunity for this conversation.
Right.
What kind of impact on that could the Unwiring LA have, and what about the human factor in trying to convince people they ought to stay put or walk around and communicate and do their work and their socializing and their shopping, let the electrons move around and let them stay still in their communities, building community in their neighborhood or wherever they are, and what do you see about in that direction?
There's two aspects where the technology might help with the traffic. One is just as you've described, which is, why are you going into work if everything is at your fingertips as if you were at work?
Right.
And the answer, of course, comes back, well, I have to talk to so-and-so and interact, and we need to be in person, and I need to see his face.
Well, you can see his face on a video conference.
Exactly.
You can see it bigger and closer and record it, and you can zoom in on the pores on his or her skin if you want to.
That's all true.
How close do you want to be?
That's all true, but despite that, we're still flying in airplanes across the world.
Well, we still are.
So there is some of that, though. Telework,
right,
and working at home and doing more work and, you know, and the degree it reduces traffic on the freeways has an instantaneous impact. But the other possibility is that maybe we can convert our mass transit systems to work kiosks and work cubicles as you travel.
Right.
And I think if people had the ability to do a good deal of their work as if they were in their office on their way to it.
Right.
That would be a great temptation versus sitting in a car and outside of this wonderful opportunity, essentially being in what we call, unfortunately, dead time.
I see. What you're saying is that they would be able to get the human interaction that they crave and need by going to the office, but instead of wasting 2 hours or 4 hours every day sitting in their cars where you can't really work,
right,
although you can do interviews sometimes, would give them another two to four hours a day of work, and they could be at work less or whatever, and it would become more valuable. It would be live time instead of dead time.
And maybe actually see their families at a reasonable hour at the end of the day.
All right. I hope you'll be able to do that when the traffic finally clears up wherever you are.
It looks like I'll be able to do it. Thanks for talking with me.
Good. Let's do this again soon, and thanks very much, and you'll be able to hear.
Thanks for your interest.
You're very welcome. Thanks for your participation, too. Talk to you later. Bye.